Domestic violence? That sounds like it's violence. Yeah, that's the crime title. Yeah, it's not violent. Rape of the unconscious, not a violent crime in California. Elder abuse, not a violent crime in California. Assault on a peace officer with a deadly weapon, unless it's a certain kind of deadly weapon, not a violent crime in the state of California. I think people, liberal, conservative, independent, no political leaning whatsoever, politically agnostic, all want to be able to go out and enjoy their lives, pursue their dreams, and not be unnecessarily concerned with or consumed with the risk of being a victim of a crime.
Right now, society in California says we're willing to accept a person going into a retail store every single day of the year and stealing $949 worth of merchandise, and being largely held harmless for that. That is the prevailing attitude toward criminal activity at the moment, said today's guest, a 31-year law enforcement veteran and former county sheriff. I'm Tony Melandra, NFIB California's senior media manager. We're proud to have this podcast supported in part by Five Star Bank, serving customers who specialize banking solutions for entrepreneurs, business owners, and community leaders in Northern California. Here to talk with today's guest is NFIB California State Director John Kabatek. Take it away, John.
Thank you, and greetings, everyone, and welcome to another amazing NFIB California Small Business Podcast sponsored by Five Star Bank. Our goal is to bring you the best and the brightest leaders and influencers helping to make a positive difference for our number one job creators, small business, and to talk about the issues that really impact Main Street. Well, today's very special guest and issue is no exception. We're honored to have with us John McGinnis, former sheriff of Sacramento County, and we're here to talk about retail theft and crime issues. Little background, Sheriff McGinnis spent more than 31 years with the Sheriff's Department in Sacramento and has served in virtually every service area of the department. As a member of the elite sheriff's motorcycle detail, as a CSI investigator, homicide detective, and a department spokesman. Wow, what hasn't you done, John? Sheriff McGinnis ultimately commanded the Centralized Investigation Division until he was appointed undersheriff in March of 2001, and in 2006, voters elected him Sacramento County Sheriff. McGinnis holds a bachelor's degree in criminal justice and a master's in emergency services administration from Cal State Long Beach, and is an adjunct professor of criminal justice with the California State University, and he was appointed to the Peace Officer Standards and Training Commission by Governor Schwarzenegger in 2007. John is the president and CEO of McGinnis Communication Solutions, a consulting and investigation enterprise, and he is the host of his own show on Sacramento's top-rated news radio, KFBK, AM 1530 and FM 93.1, which is why you'll find he's no stranger to sound studios like this and microphones like the one in front of him today. John lives in Folsom, California with his wife, Peggy, and their two children. Sheriff John McGinnis, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you. And I have to say, great topics of discussion today. I think very, very important for people to make informed decisions, knowing a little bit about the details of what's going on in our state.
We're grateful to have you. I mean, it's an issue on pretty much everybody's mind, as it should be, unfortunately. You know, one thing I didn't mention is how many years you served as sheriff. You were an awesome sheriff. I was proud to have you as my sheriff.
Thank you very much. 4 years, just one term as sheriff, and 4 years as undersheriff.
Yeah. Well, we'd love to have you in. We've had some great leadership since, but great to have you in that command and great things you're doing now. Well, tell us, John McGinnis, what first got you interested in law enforcement?
You know, actually, it was an ironic encounter. My father was stopped for speeding, and I actually had some desire to go to veterinary school, which is a quantum leap from where I wound up. But I was just very impressed with the manner in which the officers that stopped him comported themselves. They were extraordinarily professional, treated him with an abundance of respect and a little bit of humor, and I thought, you know what? I like those guys. It really truly impressed me and kind of set my interest in the law enforcement profession. And then after that, I started taking criminal justice classes and was just really taken with it. And I have zero regrets about it. I loved every minute of it. It was a wonderful career, very rewarding. Had a chance to work with some of the most extraordinary people you could ever imagine. And frankly, interact, I think, in a manner with the public that was very productive. We did some great things and felt good about the successes we had. Obviously, it's not every day is a perfect day, certainly, and things go bad. But in the final analysis, if you could look back and say, hey, we make a contribution to society, increase the likelihood of people being able to pursue their dreams and enjoy optimum quality of life, that's a big, big part of it, without which I think we see examples of where it's failing because of the absence of law enforcement today.
Amazing. A speeding ticket got you here today.
Exactly.
To this day.
Exactly.
Well, under your tenure as sheriff, you know, did a lot of stuff in those 4 years. But what is there anything in particular that comes to mind that you're particularly proud of when you were in that role? Or even maybe in your years just collectively?
Yeah. Overall, I think I was part of an assignment called Special Operations Detail. And we didn't have a beat. We didn't have a specific geographical area. It was mostly senior officers that were chosen for that assignment. And we would go out to problematic areas and enforce the law to the maximum. So you think about, are you going to go out and arrest murderers and rapists and robbers? Well, you might wind up doing that, but you're looking for evidence of misconduct at any level, kind of the broken windows theory.
Yeah.
So everything from the most minor offenses where you interact with the public, and not every one of them would result in a citation or an arrest. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But you speak with the public. You let them know that you're there. You can actually have a kind of a positive interaction with them, point out a violation of the vehicle code or some other relatively minor offense. And I think it produces a lot of positive, and you take some of the anonymity away from those who may be inclined to behave in a criminal manner. You know where they are. You know who they are. You know where they were on a given occasion. And lo and behold, you find perhaps a string of business burglaries after you encounter somebody in an area of closed businesses in the wee hours of the morning, for example. You have a pretty good idea as to who to go talk to about that. So I enjoyed kind of changing the dynamic, changing some of the trends. And we grew that operation over my years as sheriff. And I think it really did yield some positive outcomes. It's sometimes difficult to quantify because if you engage in conduct that reduces crime, it's hard to actually show an illustration by hard numbers. You have fewer cases of data created, and therefore it's hard. You hope it's – you don't know exactly what that should be attributed. In my view of the world, it really does positively impact public safety and again, really quality of life to have law enforcement interacting regularly with the public where there's a need for enforcement action. That enforcement action should be taken. But a casual conversation, a friendly conversation,
yeah,
to point out some perhaps minor violation of law can be a positive contact as well.
That's cool. And I often hear from law enforcement leaders, you know, how great the team they have there, you know,
yeah,
not just the deputy sheriffs on the beat,
oh, yeah,
but just the admin teams and everybody at the department. I always hear really great things about Sac County.
If you could have the experience of seeing the overwhelming calls, letters, and in later years, emails from the public with just gushing praise and appreciation for our law enforcement personnel in the field, it's overwhelming. That just so far outnumbers the relatively few cases of complaints. But it is, I think, a very positive influence in the community.
Yeah, well, God bless our incredible law enforcement personnel.
Yes, sir.
They're out there working every day,
yep,
bravely. Well, let's jump to an issue, obviously, that we're going to be focusing on today is California's crime wave. I mean, you can't pick up a newspaper, turn on the TV, flip on your iPhone, and not see Sacramento affected, certainly San Francisco, businesses leaving, L.A., even the rural parts. Sheriff, how bad is this crime wave today, and how the heck did we get here? How did it get so bad? It's just bad.
Well, I think it was a rather slow evolution, but I will attribute a significant negative factor to all of this in the form of Proposition 47. It was passed by the
right
voters back in 2014, November of 2014, and it was very wisely and I think and from a crafty perspective termed the Safe Neighborhoods and Safe Schools Act, which it did absolutely nothing whatsoever to contribute to the safety of neighborhoods and schools. On the contrary, in fact, there's a classic illustration of that. It passed, I think it was November 3rd or 4th of 2014. The very next day after it passed, and by the way, it was immediate. The effect was immediate. So what it called for was tremendous reduction in terms of consequences for various crimes, including eliminating something known as commercial burglary. If you think about somebody walking into a retail store and just being consumed with temptation and stealing something from that store, that is a righteous, if it's assuming it's a low-valued item, that is a petty theft shoplift. Mm-hmm. However, if they go into that business, even though it's an open business where they're welcome to be present, but they enter that store, enter the threshold with the intention to steal, historically it has been considered a burglary because it's part of the intent to enter a structure, a lockable structure in the state of California with the intent to commit theft or any other crime is a felony burglary. That went away that day with the passage of Prop 47. The very next morning in Santa Clarita, California, sheriff's deputies were dispatched to a big box store. I don't remember which one it was, but for what had been a commercial burglary. A person went into that store, a person with a lengthy criminal history, by the way, and had a device that would allow him to conceal stolen merchandise and leave that store, committed the crime, and left. So he was detained by the personnel. Deputies get there, they contact him, they get a post-Miranda statement from him, which he implicates himself for having entered the store with the intention to commit the theft. Classic commercial burglary, felony. A very astute sergeant monitored that call and called his troops and said, hey, you realize you can no longer book that guy.
Right.
Because what he has done now, as a result of what the voters have done yesterday, makes this now a misdemeanor for you to give him a citation and cut him loose. That defendant, that suspect in that case, went to a nearby school bus bench where he found a young woman, young girl, juvenile minor child, waiting for the school bus. He abducted her from that school bus bench, took her into a remote area, raped her, and left her for dead. So the irony of the Safe Neighborhoods and Safe Schools Act and the flaw, the erroneous nature of that claim being so graphically illustrated, and a very sad occasion, obviously, but it has just emanated from there a whole host of very, very bad behavior. And we lost also compounding consequences. So if in this guy's case, not only the commercial burglary component, but he also had multiple prior theft cases, which would have made him eligible for theft with a prior, the old Penal Code Section 666, which was a felony unto itself. But that's no longer in play either. So no compounding consequences for theft cases. And it raised the misdemeanor to felony threshold to $950. So you literally have now rings of thieves going out to retail stores, and they actually calculate what they can steal, what each of these people in a ring can steal with very little or minimal, at best, consequences for their conduct. So it really, truly has destroyed, I think, a significant part of commerce and business opportunities, employment opportunities, and quite candidly, the funding of public coffers, because retail sales tax is a positive for local government entities. They provide services out of that. So it's been a loss for everybody across the board. And the prevailing belief is you're going to get away with it. So I have to believe that most people listening to this podcast can come up with places they're not inclined to go anymore where they would have not too many years ago.
Absolutely.
Quite honestly, inner cities. I find myself, I want to recreate in the suburbs now because the inner city areas in virtually every venue in the state has taken on a different tone. And that's horribly destructive to quality of life.
Yeah. You know, NFIB is one of about 150 different groups, small business owners, crime victims advocates across the state that are part of a coalition that was formed last year called Californians Against Retail and Residential Theft, or CART.
I love it.
And we're, you know, CARRT.org. And we're really making sure that we're getting the voices heard out there and doing that. But what we're hearing, certainly as you're seeing, is yes, it's terrible we're seeing what's happening to the larger stores, but it's these small businesses, these ethnic businesses, these families and neighborhoods that really don't have anything to defend themselves that CART has been fighting for. And I know any crime is a bad crime. And so we try
absolutely
to abate any of those because they do affect all of us in the end. But Prop 47 is absolutely, you know, the anchor problem that we're hearing and finding and seeing. But is that the only – what else is to blame for this? Are there factors in play?
I think attitudes have deteriorated in addition to that. We've got Proposition 47, which I'll gladly blame for a lot of the evils of our state. You also have Proposition 57 that followed that was also, I think, very erroneously titled as something that would keep the most hardened criminals in custody. But what it did is provide for the early release of significant numbers of very violent criminals. So you have to know what a violent criminal is, and that's defined in Section 667 of the California Penal Code. And it's things that you would think of that represent violent conduct. For instance, domestic violence. That sounds like it's violence, isn't it? Yeah, that's the crime title.
Yeah,
it's not violent. Rape of the unconscious, not a violent crime in California. Elder abuse, not a violent crime in California. Assault on a peace officer with a deadly weapon, unless it's a certain kind of deadly weapon, not a violent crime in the state of California. So if you remember the name Brock Turner, does that ring a bell to you? The Stanford swimmer who not too many years ago sexually violated and inebriated and passed out young woman adjacent to the Stanford campus. And so think about this for a moment. He was there was a very, very thorough investigation done. He was prosecuted, actually rendered a plea deal. There was no doubt as to his guilt. The victim of that crime offered a very compelling victim impact statement in which she expressed just the terror that she experienced and what it had done to her life and the deprivation of her personal being that she experienced as a result of that. And he was sentenced to 6 months in jail for that horrendous crime because it's not considered a violent crime. And then because of the automatically attributed good time off,
right,
he spent 90 days, half of that sentence in jail. So if you think about the passage of time when you're a high school student, how fast summer goes? 90 days. That's how long this guy spent in custody for that. So outraged were the voters of Santa Clara County that they recalled that judge and removed him from the bench. Yet a year or two later, Proposition 57 is on the ballot, and it normalized that course of conduct that the Superior Court judge in Santa Clara County imposed on this Brock Turner. It made it the norm. And while the voters were sufficiently outraged to remove him, the voters in Santa Clara County, as well as Sacramento County, passed Proposition 57 because the people don't pay sufficient attention to the details. I truly believe that if you have a populace that wants to recall and remove from the bench a judge who imposed a light sentence, they would have been very much opposed to the idea, the notion of making that sentence the norm for that kind of a crime. So there's a lack of knowledge and understanding on these propositions. And of course, they're written by wordsmiths, and it takes a lot of time, energy and effort to unwind what the true consequence of that ballot measure is. So I really encourage people to take a deep dive. And if you have questions, talk to somebody that you trust to help you really truly interpret the nature of these ballot measures, because they have led us down a bad path on many occasions.
How about funding for law enforcement personnel? That's a big issue we hear. You know, we hear small business owners say, look, it does no use. Nobody's going to come and help me with this. And I don't think that's a reflection on the law enforcement personnel.
No.
It's a reflection on the fact that there's not enough of them to be able to cover it. But what are your thoughts on that? Is there hope we could see some more there?
I do see hope in that regard, because this defund the police notion became very popular. And I think across the spectrum, it is now recognized as a very, very flawed way of doing business.
Right.
And very candidly, I want to see the law enforcement agencies funded to the optimum level wherever possible. But as long as we have the laws that we have on the books, the ability to really, truly exact a benefit from the efforts of law enforcement personnel is limited. So my hope is that there will be opportunities in the future where you'll see ballot measures that will endeavor to correct some of the consequences of Propositions 47 and 57. And I will implore the people to do a deep dive in those. Again, read the language carefully. Read it again carefully. Talk to people you know and respect, perhaps lawyers and people who have written bills and ballot measures, and try to get to the truth before casting a ballot. Because I have occasion to speak with a lot of civic groups still, Rotary clubs and people of that nature, and I'll ask them, how many of you think it's a good idea to decriminalize possession of the date rape drug? Well, not a single hand goes up. Nobody thinks that's a good idea. How many think it's a good idea to reduce from a felony to a misdemeanor the theft of a gun? No hands go up. Well, how many of you voted for the Safe Neighborhoods and Safe Schools Act? Well, many hands go up. And I said, do you realize that you voted for those two things, among other very, very, very bad policies?
Yeah.
And it's a shock to them. So I just implore people. I know there are smart people taking in this podcast, and I very much appreciate what you're doing here. And I implore people to please don't vote based on the summary and title. That is established by a partisan office holder, one person in the state of California. It's not fair. It's not a legitimate way to describe something. So please do your own research and vote accordingly.
Thank you. And I do hear more and more from people out there that, you know, getting anything done under the dome of the Capitol is going to be next to impossible. What, there were like 17 public safety bills, Democrat and Republican combined authors, right, that were introduced last year. There are about 8 or 9 this year, both that included, as I understand, many of them included both, you know, accountability, but prevention and diversion programs.
Yes.
And nothing made it out.
Some very good, I'm glad you brought that up, because there's some very good bills. I testified on a handful of them, and I know it's an exercise in futility, very candidly.
Sad.
One of which was, we all know about the fentanyl crisis in this country, and we know that there were over 300 fentanyl overdoses, I call it poisonings, in Sacramento County alone in a year's period of time. Well over 300.
Wow.
That's approaching a one a day. And so there was a law that was created in the legislature called Alexandria's Law that would have required an admonition to people who are convicted of selling fentanyl. If you do this again and it results in a death, you're on notice that your conduct is sufficiently dangerous that you have satisfied the malice component of a murder charge. So you're on notice. That charge already exists. In fact, it's been filed in numerous cases in this region successfully. But it helps, I think, minimize the likelihood of people going out and re-engaging in that same conduct. There's something very similar known as the Watson admonition for DUI. If a person is arrested and convicted of DUI, mm-hmm. they're noticed per the Watson admonition that if you do this again, you have been instructed beyond dispute as to the potential consequences of your action. So you're facing the potential of a murder charge and conviction if you go out and engage in this conduct and kill somebody. Mm. That could not get through the Assembly Public Safety Committee or the Senate Public Safety Committee. It's absurd. And that was, by the way, Brooke Jenkins, the relatively new district attorney from San Francisco, who replaced Chesa Boudin that was recalled because, frankly, he had no respect for the rule of law. Brooke Jenkins, who identifies herself as a Berkeley progressive, is actually a very, very effective, committed prosecutor, and she came and testified on Alexandria's bill in favor of it. The legislative affairs director for the office of the mayor in San Francisco testified in support of it, but it could not get through the Senate Public Safety Committee. So that's where good bills go to die, and bad bills slide right through. So it's a very problematic set of circumstances.
And I try to figure out, like, exactly where do politics interfere here? Because, you know, with our CART coalition, we have actually this whole last year, we've been educating the chairs of the public safety committees, the members of the public safety committees, and educating them with people from their own backyards. You know, mayors, council members, small business owners, chamber leaders saying, look, we're suffering here. Rome is burning.
Yeah.
So we try to figure out, you know, sometimes labor unions have a lot of control, sometimes environmentalists or trial lawyers. But it's like, where is the logjam here on what should be sensible pathways to protecting us?
You have raised the billion-dollar question. And I can tell you from firsthand experience and full disclosure, I'm a small government pro-law and justice fiscal conservative Republican and have been all my life. But I will tell you that in the days of Gray Davis, for example, as governor of the state, he was profoundly supportive of public safety and actually appointed people to the parole board that imposed consequences and upheld consequences on those who egregiously offended. So this is a relatively new dynamic. And I think people, liberal, conservative, independent, no political leaning whatsoever, politically agnostic, all want to be able to go out and enjoy their lives, pursue their dreams, and not be unnecessarily concerned with or consumed with the risk of being a victim of a crime. And so I'm at an absolute loss to understand what the end goal is on it, but it's not good, and it has harmed, I think, demonstrably, the quality of life in a significant part of the state of California.
We'll be right back with more right after this.
Hi, I'm James Beckwith, President and CEO of Five Star Bank. We are excited to help bring you this series of podcasts focused on small business concerns in conjunction with the NFIB. When Five Star Bank was founded in 1999, it was business and community leaders, local entrepreneurs, who wanted to create the sort of personalized banking services they desired themselves. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. A true understanding of the needs of small business owners. I know a meaningful relationship with a banker can be hard to find. At Five Star Bank, we are responsive, understand your business, and are committed to your success. We want to be a part of your growth and a valued partner supporting your vision and your dreams. You'll find direct access to a banker, complete online and mobile business banking you need to succeed. As an SBA preferred lender, let us help you with your startup business or existing business. If you're looking to make a change, please give us the opportunity to demonstrate what our personalized banking services could mean for you. I promise you individual attention from our colleagues who understand your business and are as committed to your success as you are. You can find us online at fivestarbank.com.
What would be a piece of sensible legislation, in your opinion, Sheriff? You know, what is something that should be a no-brainer, as they say, for both sides of the aisle to be able to pass? And what would be a piece of policy that, you know, take retail theft or fentanyl or both, that would make sense, that both sides should naturally get?
I think we're going to have to get back to a time when there's statutory law that says if you engage in a theft from anybody, mm-hmm. that and you perhaps you get minimal consequences on the first go around. And as much as this goes against my grain, because I like to make it clear and unequivocal, but maybe even a second strike. But if you're living that lifestyle and you are going to continue to reoffend, I think that picks up some support from those who may be less inclined to respect the concept of hard rule of law and still ultimately impose consequences and kind of give a bit of a incentive for people to not reoffend. As I referenced earlier, that PC 666, Penal Code Section 666, was a tremendous tool. In my whole career, I never saw anybody prosecuted for petty theft with a prior. I made arrests for petty theft with a prior, but they were resolved without a felony prosecution. And probably in respect to the spirit of the law, that was okay. But it was a hammer of sorts to keep people from reoffending. And I think it worked rather well. Mm-hmm. So if you look at probably a good example of how social attitudes have changed and influenced behavior because it's not tolerated, I should say, look at DUI. There was a period of time in which the presumptive impaired alcohol level was 0.15 blood alcohol contact. That's pretty darn drunk. And it came down incrementally from a 0.15 to a 0.10 to a 0.08. And Mothers Against Drunk Driving and other people who were strong advocates against the idea of DUI became involved. And guess what? As a result of that, the incidence of impaired driving came down. Fatalities, traffic fatalities had come down. They're swinging back up now because I think, again, lawlessness and the lack of enforcement is not limited to what we generally think of as more criminal cases. But even vehicle code violations are not enforced like they once were. For a multitude of reasons, lack of staffing, the likelihood that an enforcement contact will result in a horrific outcome for the law abiding, mm-hmm. the purveyors of justice, if you will. So, but look at trends in behavior that are affected by what society says they're willing to accept. And right now, society in California has said we're willing to accept a person going into a retail store every single day of the year and stealing $949 worth of merchandise. Mm. And being largely held harmless for that.
Yeah, very sad.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of trends, looking into the John McGinnis crystal ball, what are you looking at and where do you see public safety on the California landscape over the next couple of decades?
My hope and somewhat largely belief is mm-hmm. that we are experiencing a pendulum effect and the idea of the popularity and appeal of the law enforcement profession. There was a time when we would have thousands and thousands of people show up to take a test to start a class of 70 recruits at the academy. Well, it's not like that anymore. And honestly, from one jurisdiction to the next, based upon, quite honestly, the level of support that officers are getting, feel as though they're getting from their appointing authority, some jurisdictions are doing quite well. I'm happy to say my old agency still recruits from other departments, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
But eventually, they're going to run out of qualified applicants, too. And overall, the application pool is not what it once was. It is not limited to law enforcement, however. The fire service, which I think for many people has been a very desirable profession for years, they're not seeing the enthusiasm that they once saw, the interest in it. And honestly, work across the board seems to be much less popular than it once was.
Yeah.
People are not as interested in working. So I'm hoping a combination of factors come into play and people realize, I'm sure retailers are seeing this, and small businesses in general. I know that vacant positions and a lack of interested prospects is a real problem. And the rewards that come from working, I don't think could be overstated. And I know at least my perception is there's a group of people in society, perhaps a band in our evolution that just is resistant to work. I hope that they can be encouraged to see that there is a real reward that comes from doing honorable work. And it doesn't have to be brain surgery. It can be anything. Digging a ditch and providing that service for people is noble and honorable, and it's a good thing for people to do.
Yeah. Well, hey, listeners out there, that's a clarion call to all of you. If you know somebody, you got a young person graduating from college, you got somebody who's looking for work, they're a career in not just law enforcement and police and sheriff's work, but first responders, fire, yeah. You said, across the board. But it's a rewarding, it's great rewards, great opportunities, retirement, great fulfilling.
It was, if you like the idea of team sports, being part of a team, wearing the same jersey, it is that magnified many times over. I just had this sad occasion to go to a funeral memorial service for a fallen colleague, but I could not help but be overwhelmed by the cohesive nature, looking around the room where these people were gathered and thinking, there are people here that I would walk through fire for, and I feel the same from them. I love those people, and it's the finest people I've ever encountered in my life. There was never a doubt about people being there for you and just extraordinary people. So it's a great profession, and I encourage people to give it a thought. It's not for everybody. And by the way, the psychological profile of a successful law enforcement officer is very similar to the psychological profile of a successful team athlete.
Yeah.
So I think there's some—
That makes really good sense.
Yeah.
Small businesses are hearing a lot of— we got a lot of audience here that are just folks that are from the small business Main Street community. They're wondering, as they hear about crime, retail theft, even fentanyl and violent crimes, what can a small business owner do to protect him or herself, I mean, these days? What are some steps that you would suggest to those Main Street owners, operators, employees that really would help them?
I think keep an eye on things around you. I would suggest that people are well advised to network with their fellow small business owners. I know there's a spirit of competition in some cases, but competition is good for business. I truly believe that. And the reality is, as a cohesive force, I think can kind of build strength there. Look for evidence of people misbehaving and try to establish a relationship with the purveyor of law enforcement services in your area. That's something that I love to see happen. And as a young patrol officer, I would go, when new businesses opened in my district, I'd go introduce myself to them. And I'm hoping that still happens. But the small business operators would be well advised to encourage that, foster that environment as well. And you get a more personal degree of service and, frankly, a greater likelihood that there will be law enforcement presence that kind of prevents or minimizes the likelihood of criminal activity in a certain area. Interact with one another. Interact with the community. And by the way, it's not just limited to first responders, but you have zoning and other government entities that can, I think, help out. They're also, I know, can then be a nuisance, frankly, to business owners, but they can also be a resource to help make probably a more fertile business environment in which you can thrive.
Great advice. Just as we're kind of wrapping up a little bit, what other issues are on your mind that are growing concerns? Not just in Sac County, but across the state, and you know what's emerging. I mean, I know homelessness is one we've talked about before, and that's not mutually exclusive from crime, but
it's not.
It's a problem,
and it's going to sound like I have blamed everything from every evil from the beginning of time on Prop 47. But if you think again about Proposition 47, we said that the voter said that we don't want consequences for people transporting and using hard drugs.
Yeah.
Well, who do you suppose is responsible for, or what I should say, is responsible for people living on the streets, people defecating on the sidewalks, living a horrific life, a miserable life. And that has been pushed to tolerate that under the guise of compassion. So I throw out a question to people. Who do you love that you would like to see sleeping on J Street on a 25-degree January night? Or conversely, on a 110-degree July afternoon. Nobody, I would submit. So imposing consequences for those statutory violations of law that have been with us for a long time for good reason, and getting people into something we once had as drug court that would give consequences for their behavior, felony behavior. They go through a drug court program, and it may sound warm and fuzzy, touchy-feely, with no consequence or no substance, but it was actually a very good program from which many people graduated, having cleaned up, gotten sober, and there's one Superior Court judge actually celebrated the number of successes. It was a great program. So I hope that we can look at the mistake that Proposition 47 was and try to unwind that at some point. I'm very optimistic that there'll be something coming our way.
And it's got to be a carrot, and it's got to be a little bit of a stick, too.
Without a doubt.
For sure, on both sides. But that drug court program had a history of really a great carrot in there that really encouraged people versus shamed or punished. Well, appreciate so much of this discussion,
Sheriff
John McGinnis. Anything you're working on? You've got a great— – I would encourage everybody who listens to this podcast to listen to your show regularly. It's
an
awesome program.
Much.
You want to tell anybody about when that's on and where it's on, and then, of course, also anything else you got cooking?
Yeah, I'll talk about the show first. 3 o'clock weekday afternoons on KFPK, 93.1 FM, 1530 AM. And there's also a podcast of that program you can find on KFPK.com or iHeart.com. And I'm always looking for ways to try to improve the status quo. And I really want to collaborate with others. And I sense that there may be something coming in that regard that we can put before the voters to give them some positive options in the future and turn this around. If you look at the state of California, you walk outside this studio, see what a beautiful place this is. Why is it that we have so many people leaving that we've actually lost a congressional district? You got to think about it. I often say California is God's greatest work, but regrettably human beings have compromised what it had to offer. And I'd like to see that change.
That's awesome. And McGinnis Communication Solutions, I know you do both consulting, investigation services. How can people reach you if they want to find out more about that or just get in touch with you?
Yeah, McGinnissolutions.com. It's available. There's a website there that tells a lot about what we do. And it's litigation consulting, investigation, advocacy, and some to some degree, conflict resolution.
Sheriff John McGinnis, great to have you with us. I hope you'll come back at
some point. Absolutely. I try to keep me away.
I absolutely. Not going to say that to law enforcement ever. And I promise to stay within the speed limit as I drive out of here. Also, I'll stay right in there and follow your dad's lead on that reformed.
Very good.
But thank you so much. Great to have you with us. And we'll look forward to many more times to have these discussions. And thanks for everything you do out there.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff McGinnis, for your thoughts and insights for this podcast. Again, we'd like to thank Five Star Bank for its generous support of this and future podcasts. You can learn more about Five Star Bank at fivestarbank.com. You can find all NFIB California podcasts at nfib.com/ca/podcasts. That's nfib.com/ca/podcasts. You can also find our podcasts on your favorite podcast app by searching NFIB California. I would also like to thank Multipoint Content Strategies for its production of this podcast. You can learn more about them at multipointstrategies.com. Why podcasts for small business? It's been NFIB's educational mission for 80 years to remind policymakers that small businesses are not smaller versions of big businesses, and that a one-size-fits-all rule, regulation, or tax can do Main Street enterprises more harm than good. We hope these podcasts aid in better understanding. Finally, thank you to our listeners. If you like what you heard, please share this episode, subscribe, and give us a positive rating. We would appreciate it.